Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are cutting through a lot of the noise on a threat that feels a bit like science fiction, but is very, very real.
It really is.
We're talking about Harvest Now, Decrypt Later, or HNDL.
And that's the perfect way to put it. The idea is really simple and pretty scary. Adversaries are stealing huge amounts of your encrypted data right now.
Today.
They can't break it, not yet.
Right.
But they're stockpiling it, just waiting. Well, waiting for a quantum computer powerful enough to crack it all open. It's all about deferred decryption.
So the risk isn't in the future. It's just that the payoff for the attacker is in the future. Why does that make it a problem for, say, a CISO in 2025?
It's all about the mismatch in timelines.
Yeah.
What we call data lifespan risk.
Okay.
Think about it. You've got data IP, state secrets, a patient's genetic code that needs to stay secret for, what, 30, 50, maybe 100 years.
Forever, in some cases.
Exactly. But if the encryption protecting that data is only good for another, say, 5 to 10 years, well, any data that needs to live longer than that is already vulnerable. It's an economic threat that's happening now.
That really clarifies the urgency. So our mission for this deep dive is to give you a really clear, fact-based executive summary. We're using sources from NIST, from CISA, IBM, financial regulators.
That's people on the front lines.
Right. We're going to unpack this accelerated timeline, look at the economic stakes, the government deadlines that are not suggestions, and then lay out a clear roadmap you need to follow.
We're moving it from, you know, quantum physics to logistics.
Exactly. So let's start with that timeline, because this is what's changed so dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
We need to talk about Q-Day. The day a cryptographically relevant quantum computer, a CRQC, actually arrives, what are the projections looking like now?
The clock is ticking so much faster. I mean, we used to talk about 2035, maybe 2040. That was the old academic estimate.
That felt comfortably far away.
It did. But the, let's call them the aggressive but plausible projections, they're now putting CRQC capability as early as 2028 to 2030.
2028. That's the next budget cycle. What's driving that kind of acceleration?
It's real hardware progress. This isn't just theory anymore. Look at IBM. They showed off their 1121 qubit Condor processor back in 2023. But more importantly, their public roadmap says they expect fault-tolerant systems, the kind that can run Shor's algorithm against RSA 2048, to arrive within this decade.
Is there a specific year they're aiming for?
There is. They've put a stake in the ground for a 200 logical qubit fault-tolerant machine by 2029, and that's widely seen as a key milestone, the bridge from today's noisy experimental machines to something that can do real damage.
And it's not just the hardware getting better, right? I've seen some research suggesting the software side, the algorithms themselves, are getting more efficient.
That's a huge piece of this, a crucial piece. Early estimates for breaking something like RSA 2048 needed millions of perfect logical qubits. But newer work, some of it from Google's researchers, suggests it might only take about a million noisy qubits, the kind we have now, just more of them, and maybe just a week of runtime.
So the goalposts are moving closer from both directions. Hardware's getting better, and the problem's getting easier.
Exactly. And that uncertainty is the risk. Experts are putting the probability of a CRQC breaking RSA by 2034 somewhere between 17 and 34%. You can't wait for 100% certainty to act.
No, at that point, it's far too late.
Way too late. The data's already gone. This whole thing has shifted from a physics problem to a risk management problem.
So if that 2028 to 2030 window is even remotely possible, the exposure is happening as we speak. So who gets hurt first? Which sectors have that long shelf life data?
It's all about data longevity. So you're looking at financial institutions, healthcare, government, defense contractors, big cloud providers. They all manage data that has to stay confidential for decades.
Let's drill into healthcare, because that liability feels permanent.
It's uniquely permanent, yeah. You're talking about a patient's medical history, their DNA. That information is static. It doesn't change. You can't just rotate a password on your genome.
Right.
Once that data is stolen and decrypted, the privacy loss is total. The damage is for life.
And we're already seeing the cost of a normal healthcare breach hitting, what, almost $10 million on average in 2025? HNDL adds a whole new layer to that.
It creates this long tail liability. A hospital could get sued years from now for a breach that happened today because they didn't use quantum resistant protection for data they knew needed to last for decades.
And what about finance? That feels more systemic, like it could undermine the whole market.
Absolutely. The obvious target is digital assets. The algorithm used by Bitcoin and Ethereum, ECDSA, is completely vulnerable. That's a direct threat to market integrity.
But is everyone focusing too much on, crypto assets? What about the boring stuff like 30-year mortgages or proprietary trading algorithms?
That's the exact risk. People see the flashy target, but the real systemic risk is in that boring data. The Financial Services ISAC, the FS-ISAC, they treat quantum risk as a present-day threat for this very reason.
Because the data has to outlive the encryption.
Any record that needs to be secret past 2030 has to be protected today. It's about confidence in the entire system, not just one type of asset.
And now this pressure is becoming law. We're past the point of agencies just issuing warnings. Governments are setting real hard deadlines.
They are. The U.S. government is really setting the pace here. National Security Memorandum 10, NSM 10. It sets a firm 2035 deadline for federal agencies to move their important systems over to post-quantum cryptography, PQC.
And that's not a suggestion.
Not at all. It's a mandate, and they've put a price tag on it, which tells you how seriously they're taking this.
How much are we talking?
The Office of Management and Budget, the OMB, estimates it'll cost about $7.1 billion just for the U.S. government's migration between now and 2035.
$7 billion. That should be a wake-up call to the private sector that this is a major capital investment.
It's not just another IT project, no.
So we have the deadline, we have the budget. What about the actual tools, the new encryption standards we need to use?
They're ready. That's the good news. NIST finalized the first batch of PQC standards in August 2024.
Okay.
So we have FIPS 203, which is for MLChem, for key exchange, then FIPS 204 for MLDSA digital signatures, and a backup FIPS 205 for another signature type. These are the new locks, basically.
And what about Europe? I hear their timelines are even more aggressive.
They are, especially for critical infrastructure. The EU Commission's roadmap wants all member states to have their transition plans, their inventories, their strategies started by the end of 2026.
That's very soon.
It is. And for high-risk systems, think banking, utilities, telecoms, they have to be secured with PQC by the end of 2030 at the latest.
So that 2030 deadline is the real crunch. If a big company takes, what, 5 to 15 years to do this kind of migration, that math doesn't work out very well.
It's a logistical nightmare. That's the honest truth. 5 to 15 years is the average. For a huge global company with tons of legacy tech, it could easily be 12, 15 years, maybe more.
So if a CRQC shows up in 2028 and you only start migrating in 2025,
you have a 3 to 5 year window where your most sensitive data, which has already been stolen, is completely exposed.
Okay, so we're past strategy and into pure execution mode. Given how slow this is, where does a CISO or a CPO even begin? What's step one?
Step one is the hardest, and there's no way around it. Cryptographic inventory.
You have to know what you have.
You can't protect what you can't find. You have to map every single place you use, vulnerable, crypto RSA, ECC, all of it. And it's in hardware, firmware, apps, APIs. It's everywhere. For a big firm, just that discovery can take 1 to 3 years.
3 years just to find the problems. So after that, you have to prioritize. You can't fix everything at once.
Exactly. That's step two. Risk-based prioritization. You look at your data's lifespan and its value, your crown jewels, the IP, the long-term archives, and especially your hardware security modules, the HSMs.
The digital vaults.
The vaults for your most critical keys, those have to be first in line.
Okay, so you found everything, you've prioritized. Now you have to actually start swapping things out.
Yeah.
But you can't just flip a switch to these new NIST standards overnight.
No, the ecosystem isn't ready. So the transitional strategy, step three, is to adopt hybrid cryptography.
How does that work?
You essentially use two algorithms at once. You pair a classic one, like ECC, with a new PQC one like MLChem. You get protection from both worlds. It gives you defense in depth and, crucially, backward compatibility while everyone else catches up.
And the final piece is about future proofing, right? Making sure we don't have to do this all over again in 20 years.
That's the architectural move. Step four, embrace crypto agility. You have to design your system so that you can swap out algorithms easily, like plugging in a new module. If you hard code today's crypto, you're just setting yourself up for the next failure.
You mentioned these new algorithms are lattice-based. Let's get into the weeds on that for a second. What does that actually mean for the engineers deploying them? Is this a simple replacement?
No, not at all. It's not seamless. The move to lattices is why this is so hard. To get that quantum resistance, these algorithms need much, much larger keys and signatures.
So bigger data packets on the wire, a bandwidth hit?
A huge one. We call it the bandwidth tax. An MLChem public key is about 30 to 40 times larger than what we use now. And MLDSA signatures, they can be 50 times larger.
50 times. Wow. That's not a trivial increase. That's going to break things.
It absolutely breaks things. It slows down networks. It causes packet fragmentation. You have to change your database schemas because the fields aren't big enough to hold these new keys. And the really painful part, your network gear, your firewalls, your load balancers, a lot of them will just choke on these giant certificates and drop them.
So this is an infrastructure-wide overhaul.
It is. It's complete refresh.
So to pull this all together, this whole deep dive really changes the perspective. HNDL means the quantum threat isn't distant. The theft is happening now, even if the decryption is deferred.
Right. And the transition to PQC is much more of a coordination problem than a tech problem. Think of it like Y2K or the global switch to chip and PIN credit cards. It's about multi-year, multi-billion dollar execution, training, and getting all your vendors on the same page. You can't do it alone.
So we'll leave you with a final thought, building on that idea of data permanence. If you're protecting a secret that needs to last 25 years, a patient's genome, a military secret, and that data is being siphoned off today, what is the value of any encryption if it can't guarantee confidentiality for the full life of that data?
It means confidentiality isn't a static thing anymore. It's a commitment that you have to constantly manage and reinvest in. It's a moving horizon.
That reframes the entire liability landscape. Thank you for guiding us through this. This was urgent and essential.
Thank you.
We hope this helps you map your path forward and critically, maybe start that inventory on Monday. Until next time, stay curious and protect your long-lived data.